The set text was prepared from the 1894 Chapman and Hall Christmas Stories edition by David Price. Email ccx074 at Coventry. Ack. Uck. The Wreck of the Golden Mary. The Wreck. I was apprenticed to the sea when I was 12 years old, and I have encountered a great deal of rough weather, both literal and metaphorical. It has always been my opinion, since I first possessed such a thing as an opinion, that the man who knows only one subject is next tiresome to the man who knows no subject. Therefore, in the course of my life I have taught myself whatever I could, and although I am not an educated man, I am able, I am thankful to say, to have an intelligent interest in most things. A person might suppose, from reading the above, that I am in the habit of holding forth about number one. That is not the case. Just as if I was to come into a room among strangers, and must either be introduced or introduce myself, so I have taken the liberty of passing these few remarks, simply and plainly, that it may be known who and what I am. I will add no more of the sort than, that my name is William George Ravender, that I was born at Penrith half a year after my own father was drowned, and that I am on the second day of this present blessed Christmas week of 1856, 56 years of age. When the rumor first went flying up and down that there was gold in California, which, as most people know, was before it was discovered in the British colony of Australia, I was in the West Indies, trading among the islands. Being in command and likewise part owner of a smart schooner, I had my work cut out for me, and I was doing it. Consequently, gold in California was no business of mine. But, by the time when I came home to England again, the thing was as clear as your hand held up before you at noonday. There was Californian gold in the museums and in the goldsmiths' shops, and the very first time I went upon change, I met a friend of mine, a seafaring man like myself, with a Californian nugget hanging to his watch chain. I handled it. It was as like a peeled walnut with bits unevenly broken off here and there, and then electrotyped all over, as ever I saw anything in my life. I am a single man, she was too good for this world and for me, and she died 6 weeks before our marriage day, so when I am ashore, I live in my house at Poplar. My house at Poplar is taken care of and kept ship-shape by an old lady who was my mother's maid, before I was born. She is as handsome, and as upright as any old lady in the world. She is as fond of me, as if she had ever had an only son, and I was he. Well do I know wherever I sail, that she never lays down her head at night without having said, Merciful Lord, bless and preserve William George Ravender, and send him safe home, through Christ our Savior. I have thought of it in many a dangerous moment, when it has done me no harm, I am sure. In my house at Poplar, along with this old lady, I lived quiet for best part of a year. Having had a long spell of it among the islands, and having, which was very uncommon in me, taken the fever rather badly. At last, being strong and hardy, and having read every book I could lay hold of, right out, I was walking down Ludendell Street in the city of London, thinking of turning to again, when I met what I call Smithick and Waterspy of Liverpool. I chanced to lift up my eyes from looking in at a ship's chronometer in a window, and I saw him bearing down upon me, head on. It is, personally, neither Smithick, nor Waterspy, that I here mention, nor was I ever acquainted with any man of either of those names, nor do I think that there has been any one of either of those names in that Liverpool house 4 years back. But, it is in reality the house itself, that I refer to. And a wiser merchant or a truer gentleman never stepped. My dear Captain Ravender, says he, of all the men on earth, I wanted to see you most. I was on my way to you. Well, says one, that looks as if you were to see me, don't it? With that I put my arm in his, and we walked on towards the Royal Exchange, and when we got there, walked up and down at the back of it, where the clock tower is. We walked an hour and more, for he had much to say to me. He had a scheme for chartering a new ship of their own, to to take out cargo to the diggers and emigrants in California, and to buy and bring back gold. Into the particulars of that scheme I will not enter, and I have no right to enter. All I say of it is, that it was a very original one, a very fine one, a very sound one, and a very lucrative one beyond doubt. He imparted it to me as freely as if I had been a part of himself. After doing so, he made me the handsomest sharing offer that ever was made to me, boy or man, or I believe to any other captain in the merchant navy, and he took this round turn to finish with. Ravender, you are well aware that the lawlessness of that coast and country at present is as special as the circumstances in which it is placed. Crews of vessels outward bound, desert as soon as they make the land. Crews of vessels homeward bound, ship at enormous wages, with the express intention of murdering the captain and seizing the gold freight. No man can trust another, and the devil seems let loose. Now, says he, you know my opinion of you, and you know I am only expressing it, and with no singularity, when I tell you that you are almost the only man on whose integrity, discretion, and energy and C4, I don't want to repeat what he said, though I was and am sensible of it. Notwithstanding my being, as I have mentioned, quite ready for a voyage, still I had some doubts of this voyage. Of course I knew, without being told, that there were peculiar difficulties and dangers in it, a long way over and above those which attend all voyages. It must not be supposed that I was afraid to face them, but, in my opinion, a man has no manly motive or sustainment in his own breast for facing dangers, unless he has well considered what they are, and is able quietly to say to himself, none of these perils can now take me by surprise. I shall know what to do for the best in any of them. All the rest lies in the higher and greater hands to which I humbly commit myself. On this principle I have so attentively considered, regarding it as my duty, all the hazards I have ever been able to think of, in the ordinary way of storm, shipwreck, and fire at sea, that I hope I should be prepared to do, in any of those cases, whatever could be done, to save the lives entrusted to my charge. As I was thoughtful, my good friend proposed that he should leave me to walk there as long as I liked, and that I should dine with him by and by at his club in Pall Mall. I accepted the invitation and I walked up and down there, quarter-deck fashion, a matter of a couple of hours, now and then looking up at the weathercock as I might have looked up aloft, and now and then taking a look into Cornhill, as I might have taken a look over the side. All dinner time, and all after dinner time, we talked it over again. I gave him my views of his plan, and he very much approved of the same. I told him I had nearly decided, but not quite. Well, well, says he, come down to Liverpool tomorrow with me, and see the Golden Mary. I liked the name, her name was Mary, and she was golden, if golden stands for good, so I began to feel that it was almost done, when I said I would go to Liverpool. On the next morning, but one, we were on board the Golden Mary. I might have known, from his asking me to come down and see her, what she was. I declare her to have been the completest, and most exquisite beauty, that ever I set my eyes upon. We had inspected every timber in her, and had come back to the gangway, to go ashore from the dock basin, when I put out my hand to my friend. Touch upon it, says I, and touch heartily. I take command of this ship, and I am hers and yours, if I can get John Steedyman for my chief mate. John Steedyman had sailed with me 4 voyages. The first voyage John was 3rd mate out to China, and came home 2nd. The other 3 voyages he was my 1st officer. At this time of chartering the Golden Mary, he was aged 32. A brisk, bright, blue-eyed fellow, a very neat figure and rather under the middle size, never out of the way, and never in it, a face that pleased everybody and that all children took to, a habit of going about singing as cheerily as a blackbird, and a perfect sailor. We were in one of those Liverpool hackney coaches in less than a minute, and we cruised about in her upwards of 3 hours, looking for John. John had come home from Van Diemen's Land barely a month before, and I had heard of him as taking a frisk in Liverpool. We asked after him, among many other places, at the two boarding houses he was fondest of, and we found he had had a week's spell at each of them. But he had gone here and gone there, and had set off to lay out on the main, to gallant yard of the highest Welsh mountain, so he had told the people of the house, and where he might be then, or when he might come back, nobody could tell us. But it was surprising, to be sure, to see how every face brightened the moment there was mention made of the name of Mr. Steedyman. We were taken aback at meeting with no better luck, and we had wore ship and putter hat for my friends, when as we were jogging through the streets, I clapped my eyes on John himself coming out of a toy shop. He was carrying a little boy, and conducting two uncommon pretty women to their coach, and he told me afterwards, that he had never in his life seen one of the three before, but that he was so taken with them on looking in at the toy shop, while they were buying the child a cranky Noah's Ark, very much down by the head, that he had gone in, and asked the lady's permission, to treat him to a tolerably correct cutter there was in the window, in order that such a handsome boy might not grow up with a lubberly idea of naval architecture. We stood off and on until the lady's coachman began to give way, and then we hailed John. On his coming aboard of us, I told him, very gravely, what I had said to my friend. It struck him, as he said himself, amidships. He was quite shaken by it. Captain Ravender, were John Steedyman's words, such an opinion from you is true commendation, and I'll sail round the world with you for 20 years, if you hoist the signal, and stand by you forever. And now indeed I felt, that it was done, and that the Golden Mary was afloat. Grass never grew yet under the feet of Smithick and Waterspy. The riggers were out of that ship in a fortnight's time, and we had begun taking in cargo. John was always aboard, seeing everything stowed with his own eyes, and whenever I went aboard myself early or late, whether he was below in the hold, or on deck at the hatchway, or overhauling his cabin, nailing up pictures, in it of the blush roses of England, the bluebells of Scotland, and the female shamrock of Ireland. Of a certainty I heard John singing like a blackbird. We had room for 20 passengers. Our sailing advertisement was no sooner out than we might have taken these 20 times over. In entering our men, I and John, both together, picked them, and we entered none, but good as were to be found in that port. And so, in a good ship of the best build, well owned, well arranged, well officered, well manned, well found in all respects, we parted with our pilot at 4:15 in the afternoon of the 7th of March, 1851, and stood with a fair wind out to sea. It may be easily believed, that up to that time I had had no leisure, to be intimate with my passengers. The most of them were then in their berths seasick, however, in going among them, telling them what was good for them, persuading them not to be there, but to come up on deck and feel the breeze, and in rousing them with a joke, or a comfortable word, I made acquaintance with them, perhaps, in a more friendly, and confidential way from the first, than I might have done at the cabin table. Of my passengers, I need only particularize, just at present, a bright-eyed blooming young wife who was going out to join her husband in California, taking with her their only child, a little girl of 3 years old, whom he had never seen, a sedate young woman in black, some 5 years older, about 30 as I should say, who was going out to join a brother, and an old gentleman, a good deal like a hawk, if his eyes had been better, and not so red, who was always talking, morning, noon, and night, about the gold discovery. But, whether he was making the voyage, thinking his old arms could dig for gold, or whether his speculation was to buy it, or to barter for it, or to cheat for it, or to snatch it anyhow from other people, was his secret. He kept his secret. These three and the child were the soonest well. The child was a most engaging child, to be sure, and very fond of me. Though I am bound, to admit that John Steadiman and I were born on her pretty little books in reverse order, and that he was captain there, and I was mate. It was beautiful to watch her with John, and it was beautiful to watch John with her. Few would have thought it possible to see John playing at Bo Peep round the mast, that he was the man who had caught up an iron bar and struck a Malay and a Maltese dead, as they were gliding with their knives down the cabin stair aboard the bark Old England, when the captain lay ill in his cot off Sauger Point. But he was, and give him his back against a bulwark, he would have done the same by half a dozen of them. The name of the young mother was Mrs. Atherfield, the name of the young lady in black was Miss Collishaw, and the name of the old gentleman was Mr. Arks. As the child had a quantity of shining fair hair, clustering in curls all about her face, and as her name was Lucy, Steadiman gave her the name of the Golden Lucy. So, we had the Golden Lucy and the Golden Mary. And John kept up the idea to that extent as he and the child went playing about the decks, that I believe she used to think the ship was alive somehow, a sister or companion, going to the same place as herself. She liked to be by the wheel, and in fine weather, I have often stood by the man whose trick it was at the wheel, only to hear her, sitting near my feet, talking to the ship. Never had a child such a doll before, I suppose. But she made a doll of the Golden Mary, and used to dress her up by tying ribbons, and little bits of finery to the belaying pins, and nobody ever moved them, unless it was to save them from being blown away. Of course I took charge of the two young women, and I called them my dear, and they never minded, knowing that whatever I said, was said in a fatherly and protecting spirit. I gave them their places on each side of me at dinner, Mrs. Atherfield on my right and Miss Collishaw on my left, and I directed the unmarried lady to serve out the breakfast, and the married lady to serve out the tea. Likewise I said to my black steward in their presence, Tom Snow, these two ladies are equally the mistresses of this house, and do you obey their orders equally? At which Tom laughed, and they all laughed. Old Mr. Arks was not a pleasant man to look at, nor yet to talk to, or to be with, for no one could help seeing that he was a sordid and selfish character, and that he had warped further and further out of the straight with time. Not but what he was on his best behavior with us, as everybody was, for we had no bickering among us, forward or aft. I only mean to say, he was not the man one would have chosen for a messmate. If choice there had been, one might even have gone a few points out of one's course, to say, no, not him. But, there was one curious inconsistency in Mr. Arks. That was, that he took an astonishing interest in the child. He looked, and I may add, he was, one of the last of men, to care at all for a child, or to care much for any human creature. Still, he went so far as to be habitually uneasy if the child was long on deck, out of his sight. He was always afraid of her falling overboard, or falling down a hatchway, or of a block, or what not coming down upon her from Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.